Foul Play, a murder game played by people whose business is murder. And here to see Foul Play is your chairman, Simon Brett.
Thank you. Welcome to another nice, cosy half hour of Homicide, in which a murder will take place before your very ears and its perpetrator will be identified before you're very much older. To help in that identification process, I am joined by two extremely eminent crime writers, both of whom are best known by their initials. If I started to list the achievements of P.D. James, there wouldn't be any time for the rest of the programme. So I'll just say, welcome, Phyllis. Are you ready for the fray?
I am indeed, Simon.
Phyllis is joined by the man who created Inspector Goatee and who is president of the Extremely Exclusive Detection Club, HRF Keating. Harry, are your loins suitably girded for action?
Yes, they are.
Oh, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest investigators. And I'm delighted to say that today's Newgate calendar of rogues and red herrings will once again be played by Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. Enough introductions, time for a crime. Curb your seasonal goodwill and sharpen your suspicions as Lee reads us the opening of this week's mystery, The Proof of the Pudding.
The Christmas Day ritual at Windbillow Hall was unvarying. It had been established when the Dewlaps first married, and the only change after Lady Dewlap's death was that there was one less chair at the luncheon table. Otherwise, Bunting the cook served an unvarying meal to an unvarying number of people. Six. Lord Dewlap, peer of the realm and amateur scientist, sat at the head of the table. Nobody dared start eating any course until after he had taken his first mouthful. To his right sat his son and heir, Tuppy Dewlap. To the noble lord's left sat a favoured guest, in this particular year the wealthy American widow, Dorothea Stuke Wilmington. And at the far end of the table sat the local vicar, doctor and solicitor. Conversation at the luncheon table was strained, and silences were as long as the Dewlap family nose. This particular Christmas, however, far enough away from the end of the First World War for people to start worrying about the prospect of a second, something different did happen. When Bunting brought in the unvarying slab of Christmas pudding, the brandy she had poured over it failed to ignite. And when Lord Dewlap took his first mouthful of the unappetizing stodge, his aristocratic jowls became instantly suffused by a rich purple tinge. He rose from his chair, clutching at his throat, fighting ineffectually for breath. Then he pitched forward, ending up with the Dewlap family nose stuck in the brandy butter. He was unquestionably dead.
Thank you, Lee. A seasonal flavour to our crime, I'd say, and maybe a golden age country house setting. Phyllis and Harry, have you heard anything so far that sounds suspicious, apart, that is, from the author's prose style?
I don't think I could say I've got any clues yet.
Good.
The whole setup is highly suspicious, I have to say.
Yes, Harry.
Yes, I think that the brandy butter is something one should take a lot of looking at.
Absolutely. Right. I think what you really need is a little more concrete detail, so we'd better find out the official view of the appalling murder of Lord Dewlap. The detective in charge is Inspector Copper of the Ruralshire Police Force, who is giving a press conference even as I speak.
What killed Lord Dewlap was undoubtedly poison. It was in the brandy bottle, whose contents were poured over the Christmas pudding. We've done extensive laboratory tests and have identified it positively as a poison unknown to medical science. Probably one that Lord Dewlap himself developed in his laboratory experiments. Lord Dewlap died at 2:15 in the afternoon, and we know that at 1:30 the bottle contained genuine brandy. We know this because Bunting, the cook's son Willem, has confessed that he and his mother each took a swig at that time. Willem subsequently joined the servants' Christmas lunch in the stable block, so was not in the kitchen at the time when the brandy bottle could have been tampered with. In fact, only three people could have got into the kitchen during the relevant period. The local vicar, doctor and solicitor did not leave the dining room, nor did Lord Dewlap himself. Dorothea Stuke Wilmington did go out for a few moments, however, saying she had to make a telephone call to wish her sister an happy Christmas. And Master Tuppy also went out to change his waistcoat, on which he had spilled some claret. But they both deny going into the kitchen, and, because they're both toffs, I believe them. It seems to me the only person who had the opportunity to substitute the poison for the brandy was Bunting, the cook. And since she's a member of the servant classes, she undoubtedly did it.
Well, thank you very much, Inspector Copper. A very even-handed summing up. Well, I think it's time that we heard from some of the people involved in the case. Three of them have given statements to the Ruralshire Police. And the first comes from the cook at Windbillow Hall, Bunting.
I've been at Windbillow Hall nigh on 25 years. I came as a chambermaid just before the master got married. Then I worked up to cook, and I've been doing that ever since. Oh, I know everything about cooking, yeah. I learnt the rules, I did. Like, there's something wrong with your pastry if it rises, and no vegetable can be boiled too long. That's right. Oh, this will be the 17th Christmas lunch I done there. This year, we're no different from no other. Well, except for Lord Dewlap dying, of course. Oh, yes, I poured the brandy over the Christmas pudding. Always do, yes. Oh, I should have smelt a rat, maybe when it didn't light, but the thought of poison never entered my head. I had no reason to kill the master. He's been good to me. I even found work for young Willem, although the boy ain't particular rich in the brain department, no. Oh, Willem's father, he were a passing tinker, yeah. He took advantage of me 22 years ago, yeah, when I was too young to know what's what. And now I do know what's what, I don't want nothing to do with it, thanks very much. Now, if you want my opinion, the murderer was that American woman, you know, with the two surnames. I never trust a foreigner. I say particularly a Yank, you know. I reckon she'd got her beady eyes on Windbillow Hall and the Dewlap title. You know, she wanted to become the second Lady Dewlap, she did, and when the master made it clear he weren't having none of that, she'd done away with him out of wounded pride. Now, if you'll excuse me, I gotta get the rest of the meat off that turkey carcass.
Yes, if you wouldn't just mind staying for a moment, Bunting. Phyllis, perhaps you'd like to start Bunting's cross-examination.
When did Lady Dewlap die?
That would be about 10 years ago. She weren't very well, though. She was sickly. She had a wheelchair and stuff.
Now, this brandy, you poured it on to the pudding. Had you used that brandy bottle earlier?
Oh, yes, of course. Ma'am, I had.
Somebody had brandy from that bottle.
That's right. I always use the best brandy for Christmas, the stuff we get from Greece.
How much brandy was left in the bottle?
Not so much, ma'am. But I think my son Willem likes a bit of a swig of brandy.
When he had the swig, did he lift the bottle to his lips or pour it out? Were you there when this dreadful deed was taking place?
Oh, no, ma'am. No, ma'am. I've been so busy with the turkey carcass.
He just confessed that he had had it.
That's right, ma'am.
Harry.
Yes, Bunting. Are you expecting to be given a small sum under the will of Lord Dewlap?
I don't think so, sir.
Why not?
Well, because I have to stay on and work for Master Tuppy now.
You don't think that, having worked so long for Lord Dewlap, he might have left you a small token?
Sir, I would like to think so, but I don't think those toffs treat us underclasses the way you would like them to be treated. Do you know what I'm saying?
You say that Lord Dewlap was always good to you.
You were a good employer, that's right, sir.
Now, what exactly do you mean by good to you?
He treated us well, sir. At Christmas we had a satsuma and an apple. And we had a day off each year, sir.
If Lord Dewlap would ring his bell in the middle of the night, you might go to his room?
No, sir.
You wouldn't?
I wouldn't, sir, no.
Thank you very much, Harry. I think you are getting close to being prurient there. And it's time for us to move on to our second statement, which comes from the son and heir to the murdered man, and indeed to all of the Windbillow Hall estate, Tuppy Dewlap.
Bit of a damper having the aged P croak like that. No, weren't close. I had nothing against the old pater, no. Well, except that he was a bit tight-fisted. Kept me rather short in the old spondulics department, know what I mean? Oh, well, obviously when I need more money, I just borrow some. Of course, I've got socking great debts. Right, well, going back to the events of Christmas lunch, and well, it was, as ever, dull beyond words. That's why I hit the claret rather hard. And too hard, as it turned out. Spilled it over myself. Had to go and change my waistcoat. No, just went after my dressing room, nowhere else. Didn't rush, mind. Less time I had to spend over luncheon, the better, far as I was concerned. had a couple of snifters of whiskey up in the dressing room, then oozed back downstairs. Now, I can't imagine who'd want the aged P dead. This kind of crime's usually committed by servants, isn't it? I'd get out the thumbscrews and rack for old Bunting if I were you. Dorothea Stuke Wilmington? Now, she acts like she's got breeding, but then she's American, so obviously she hasn't. Yes, I think she had rather set her cap at the old man, but I don't think she stood an earthly. He'd been married once, and he'd hated that. And no way he was going to go through the whole ghastly business again.
Thank you very much, Tuppy, or to give you what is now your proper title, Lord Dewlap.
Oh, crikey, thanks.
Right, Harry and Phyllis, you have 2 minutes to grill the young man. Harry, you kick off.
Lord Dewlap, as I must call you. Do you know what is meant by a bailiff?
Bailiff? Oh, I know, the chaps that come knocking on your door, knocking it down, selling your goods and chattels and so forth. Oh, frightful fellows, frightful fellows.
Rather more, the chap who comes and seizes your property when you are deeply in debt.
Sounds dashed painful, old fellow.
Has this happened to you?
Oh, good Lord, no, no, not with a historic family like the Dewlaps. Bailiffs wouldn't dare come knocking on our door. By golly, I'd set the dogs on them.
Well, we'll leave that for what it is worth now. How did it come about that you were drinking claret before the meal? You mean to tell me that the heir to the Dewlap fortune did not drink sherry before dinner?
Can I say something, old man? You would half remind me of my father. Good God, it's as if he's living and breathing now. That same old tone, bally hell. If you'll excuse my bally language.
I'll excuse you from any further examination. I know what I know.
Isn't he, this one? Getting my back up, I say.
Phyllis, maybe you'd like to patronise the young man.
Yes, I believe you are not fully entitled to call yourself Lord Dewlap until your unfortunate father is buried, but nevertheless, I...
Really? Dash it all. It seems unfair.
Well, there it is. Now, your father, of course, was a noted amateur scientist, and we have been told by Inspector Cropper that, in fact, he was killed by a poison unknown to science. Did you have access to your father's laboratory?
Oh, good Lord, no, nor would I have wanted it. Him mucking around with those test tubes, always got his nose into something, some glass ampule with some frightful stuff in there. Oh, no, no, I'd rather be sniffing some 27 Amontillado or something.
Is it not a fact that he tried to interest you in his hobby, perhaps in a vain attempt to get closer to you as his son?
Oh, good Lord, no. Didn't want to get close to me as a son. Wanted nothing to do with me. Packed me off to school as soon as he could. As soon as I was expelled, packed me off to another one, and so on. In the end, he just had a standing order of packing off, really.
And you, of course, we know, were in a perilous position, financially speaking. Your father's death, obviously, is hugely advantageous to you. You didn't love him. He is now dead, and you will inherit a great fortune. That is the fact, is it not?
Absolutely.
That is the truth. Right. Let us then get back to
Good Lord, it's like both me parents are alive. I don't believe it.
Could I just ask about your relationship with the cook?
Oh, well, Bunting would put some sort of stodge in front of me occasionally. I would pretend to eat it, shove it under the table, feed it to the dog, and go out and eat with the gamekeepers. Oh, Bunting, terrible cook, awful woman. Never really had much of a conversation with her. Been here around a long time, apparently. Oh, can't say I've noticed it much.
Thank you very much. What a delightful son he is.
Thank you very much, Tuppy. I can't call you Lord Dewlap until your father is safely
Damn shame about that.
6 feet under. Sorry
oh, well,
about
never
that.
Mind.
Right. We will move on to our third statement, which was given to the police by the wealthy American Christmas house guest at Windbillow Hall, Dorothea Stuke Wilmington.
I am absolutely desolated by Lord Dewlap's death. Oh, he was a fine man. I make no secret of the fact that I admired him. I cannot imagine who would want to murder his lordship. I know his son resented the short financial rein on which his father kept him, but Tuppy Dewlap is a fine young man who would never commit this kind of crime. Oh, Tuppy is so good-looking, and with that wonderful English accent. He's been very complimentary to me while I've been here. I'm afraid he may be a little smitten. I do seem to have this effect on the slightly younger man. I am a widow, sadly. I was only able to enjoy 2 years of wedded bliss to Sherman J. Stuke Wilmington before his tragic death in a Colorado skiing accident. He did leave me the oil wells, though, so at least I'll never have to worry about money. My financial affairs are managed by the New York lawyers, Jackovitz and Kleinman. Bunting the cook, I'm afraid I hadn't thought of her in connection with this crime. It's not my habit to think about domestics at all, actually. I can't imagine why she might want to kill such a generous employer as Lord Dulap. Yes, I did leave the luncheon table to telephone and wish my sister a happy Christmas. She lives in London and... Oh, Mrs. Vera Chiddingford. Lord Dulap made no fuss about any breach of etiquette in my leaving the table, but then he knew I was an American. Also, oh, Lord, I have to tell you. Lord Dulap had asked me to marry him. He was set to announce the news at the end of Christmas lunch, after the loyal toast. And now, lordy, lordy, he's dead.
There, there, Mrs. Stute Wilmington. Please, borrow my handkerchief.
Why, thank you, sir.
Right. Guest... Guest... Could I have it back? Guest investigators, 2 minutes of cross-examination. Maybe you'd like to start, Phyllis.
May I offer you my sincere condolences, Mrs. Stute Wilmington?
Why, thank you.
Losing, obviously, such a wealthy husband, prospective husband. Would you forgive me if I ask you how old you are?
I'm 29.
You are 29. And I believe a Tuppy Dulap is just a year or two older than you, is he not?
I believe, ma'am, and Tuppy Dulap is 22.
Yes, and his father, of course, was considerably older. You were going to marry an elderly man, were you not?
Well, ma'am, my first husband, he was 87 when he died. I warned him not to go skiing. I thought he was too old, but he wanted to go. It was a chairlift, ma'am.
But you had accepted his proposal, had you not, Mrs. Stute Wilmington?
I had.
Obviously, Lord Dulap was fond of you and took you into his confidence. Did he not introduce you to his laboratory and explain some of these experiments which meant so much to his lordship?
Well, he took me to his laboratory in the East Wing, but, ma'am, I have to tell you, that went right over my pretty little southern head.
But he didn't show you a bottle and say, in this bottle is a poison.
You know he didn't.
This bottle contains a poison unknown to science.
I can't recall him ever saying that, no. I'm sure I'd remember.
I find this very curious. However, I suggest that you know a great deal more about his lordship's experiments than you are willing to tell us.
Harry, pick up the baton.
Yeah, you've just spoken of your pretty little southern head, and may I say, it is a pretty little head. But do you have the accent to match?
I don't think so.
I don't think you do. I leave it at that. I simply put into your head, your pretty little head, the word adventurous. Oh. I say no more.
Sir.
Well, do you understand the word adventurous, Mrs. Stute Wilmington?
I don't, I'm afraid.
No.
Does he mean I travel a lot?
I think that's probably what he means. Thank you very much indeed, Mrs.
Thank you so much.
Stuke Wilmington. Phyllis and Harry, you've heard all the statements. You've asked the odd question. Has any of it brought you any closer to naming the murderer of Lord Dulap? Where are your suspicions at the moment?
I have to say mine are certainly with Mrs. Stuke Wilmington.
Last time I was on this investigative team with Phyllis James, may I remind you that we triumphed. And how did we triumph? By simply me paying attention to what Phyllis said and going along with her.
Disaster faces.
So Dorothea Stute Wilmington is at the top of your list by a strange coincidence as well. Well, thank you very much. We'll find out how close you are to the truth as our investigation proceeds. Now, the next step that has to be taken is the visit... Excuse me, there's someone at the door. Come in.
Oh, I'd be sorry to trouble you, sir.
That's quite all right, Inspector Copper. Come right inside. Roast your chestnuts by the fire.
Thank you kindly, sir. Tis just, sir, as we've found two pieces of new evidence.
Two?
The first come in the form of a wireless telegraph cable from the firm of New York lawyers, Jackovitz and Kleinman. And it reads as follows.
Reference your inquiry. Stop. No man is managed by Jackovitz and Kleinman in the name of Stuke Wilmington. Stop. Only relevant file reference dated 2 years ago. Stop. Sherman J. Stuke Wilmington filed for bankruptcy. Stop.
Well, there's a turn-up. But, Inspector Copper, you said you had two new pieces of evidence.
Aye, sir. Second piece with this letter, given to the local solicitor by Lord Dewlap with instructions for it to be opened in the event of my death. And it do read as follows. This is the codicil to my existing will, which leaves Wind Below Hall and all the rest of my estate to my son, Mortimer, known as Tuppy Dewlap. This codicil is related to something which I have kept secret throughout my life, but now that I am dead, I wish to see justice done. From my estate shall be formed a trust fund of £50,000 to be invested to produce an annual income for life for my illegitimate son, William, known as Willem Bunting.
Well, my goodness me, what a turnaround. That new evidence has rather turned the case on its head, hasn't it? I think what you really need is a bit of follow-up questioning. You can now call back the three people who previously gave statements, and you can each ask each of them one question.
Tuppy, if I may call you such.
Oh, do so.
Have you at any time had occasion to imitate your father's signature in order to obtain money?
No, haven't done, actually. Never had to. Just wave the old title or prospective title in front of people of trade and they just come up with the Spondulix Toot Suite. Marvellous thing, the class system, don't you know?
Tuppy, if I have to. were you aware of the complete contents of your late father's will?
Absolutely no idea what was in the aged P's will. Never would show it to me. I wanted to see it just to make sure I got the whole bally lot.
Yes, you've had your questions, and who would you like to call next to the stand?
Shall we take Bunting next?
Bunting.
Did you know that his lordship had made provision for his son in his will?
No, ma'am, I did not. I were just grateful that he let me and my illegitimate son stay here, even though he were the father.
Right, Harry.
Bunting, I asked you before whether you had ever visited Lord Dewlap in the middle of the night.
I didn't never visit him, sir. He visited me.
Very well.
When he'd been drinking a little bit, sir, he used to come into my room, and there were nothing that could do about it, sir. Nothing at all.
And I note it as a possible motive for murder.
Right. Thank you very much, Bunting. And you can now speak to Dorothea Stuke Wilmington.
We have been told of the arrival from the New York lawyer of this telegram. I would just like an explanation, if you don't mind, Mrs. Stuke Wilmington.
I'm afraid I'm as much in the dark as you are, ma'am, about this. I thought I had money in the bank. I am devastated.
Mrs. Stuke Wilmington, you say you thought you had money in the bank. Did you also think you had a sister whom you had to phone at 2 o'clock precisely?
No, my sister is very real, sir.
Yes, I think we'll leave it at that.
Right. Thank you very much, Mrs. Stuke Wilmington. And there, we've come to the end of your questioning. Your investigation is indeed at an end. All that remains, Harry and Phyllis, is for you each to tell me who you believe to be our murderer. Phyllis, who do you think... Well, actually, I only have to ask Phyllis, because clearly Harry will go along. Phyllis, who do you think done it, and indeed why?
I would like, just as a word, to go through them. Tuppy Dewlap, obviously he has a motive, he had means, he had opportunity. Just whether he has the intelligence to recognise a poison unknown to science depends on, we cannot know how far his father took him into his confidence. As they were not close, I suspect that may not have been so. Bunting, yes, she now has a motive, which we didn't think that she had before. Dorothea Stuke Wilmington. When old man died, of course, she lost the opportunity of becoming Lady Dewlap and getting a great deal of money. So on the face of it, what had she got to gain? I can only think that she was the murderess if, in fact, she did intend to transfer her affections to Tuppy afterwards. And I am still inclined to think that it is Dorothea Stuke Wilmington, even though I have a most awful feeling that I'm totally wrong.
Right. Harry, is it worth my asking
what
your view
is? Indeed it is.
Right.
I'll plump for... Oh, Tuppy Dewlap.
Tuppy. Right. So, Phyllis, an interesting divergence here. Phyllis backs Dorothea as our murderer, and Harry says it was Tuppy. What did happen that fateful Christmas day? We're about to find out in this week's Foul Play, Foul Playlet. Lee and Maria, transport us to the kitchen at Windbillow Hall.
Now, William, you best be off to the servants' lunch now.
Mother. I was thinking, though, I wouldn't mind a taste of that brandy there.
Oh, you have a swig, my boy. Lord Dulep, he won't mind.
Oh, you have some and all, Mother.
Right, sir. So, them all sitting around having their Christmas lunch, are they?
Oh, not all. I saw young Master Tuppy. He were walking across the hall carrying a bottle of some pale-coloured liquid.
Was he? Well, that'd be...
Mrs. Stool Warmington.
I need to talk to you, Bunting. You best be off to your Christmas lunch, Willem.
Right you are, Mother.
I got your note. How did you discover I haven't actually got any money? I found a letter in your room from one of your henchmen. So, you know... Well, it doesn't matter now. Lord Dulep has proposed to me. He's going to announce our engagement after the loyal toast. Well, if I tell him what I know, I don't think he'll be so keen. You won't get a chance to tell him. This bottle of pale-coloured liquid contains one of Lord Dulep's inventions, a poison unknown to medical science. And you'll be drinking a full dose of it, Bunting, before you...
Oh, hello there, Bunting. Dorothea...
Tuppy, why are you carrying that bottle of pale cold liquid?
Oh, well, you see, I spilled claret all over my waistcoat. Best thing to get rid of red wine's white wine, don't you know? Worked a treat, as you see. I say, what's this bottle of pale coloured liquid on the table here?
Oh, that's... I've no idea. I must go and rejoin the luncheon party. What this bottle of pale-coloured liquid on the table here is, actually, Sir Master Tuppy, is a poison unknown to medical science.
Is it really? Ooh, I say, crikey.
Which Mrs. Stoop Wilmington was going to pour over the Christmas pudding, so that when your father took his first mouthful, he'd die.
Lummy. What would you want to do that for?
Offended, I reckon, because your father rejected her advances.
Ooh, that's a facer.
Cos, if you was to pour it over the Christmas pudding, Mrs. Stoop Wilmington would be the prime suspect. Your father would be dead and you'd get all the money and the title and sharpish, eh?
Coo, that's a thought. Oh, going to take a mo to get the old brain box round this one, Bunting. Tell us all to the guard to think it through. Back in a mo.
You're the one with the best motive, Master Tuppy. William will vouch for the fact he saw you carrying a bottle of pale-coloured liquid in the hall. I'll vouch for the fact that we discussed you murdering your old man and for the fact that I left you alone in the kitchen with the poison bottle and the brandy bottle. Your father will die, leaving you his heir, but then, after you've been arrested and hanged for his murder, the old Windbillow Hall estate will go to your half-brother, my son Willem. Willem will be Lord Dulep. Oh, the proof of the pudding is in the poison, isn't it? Christmas pudding's ready for you now, Lord Dulep.
So, Phyllis and Harry, that's what really happened. Well, it's like the three-card trick, isn't it? You know, you had three cards to choose from and you chose the wrong one. Anyway, that is it for this tinsel-covered and lametta-bedecked Foul Play. My thanks go to our special Christmas assortment of characters, all played by Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. And thanks also to our splendidly seasonal guest investigators, P.D. James and H.R.F. Keating.
Foul Play was devised and written by the chairman, Simon Brett. The producer was Liz Anstey.